So, very interesting question where style meets substance, form and content. And it's really very brilliant of the Sfas to connect Shiras Hayam. What would you connect Shiras Hayam to? Well, if you're looking at the content, you'd probably connect it to other Shiros, the Shira in Bamidbar, the Shira of David, other poetry, poetic sections in the Torah, Parshas Hazino. But if you're looking at the style and the form, and you're thinking not just of associative manners, but in contrasting manners, then it turns out that Shir HaSayam is the exact inverse of Parshas Vayechi. Why is Shir HaSayam the exact inverse of Parshas Vayechi? Because between Vayigash and Vayechi, there are no spaces where there should be spaces. Between every sitter in the Torah, there are at least 9 spaces. There's a Parsha, the Parsha Psukha, or Parsha Sturma. So it's very closed, and it's very enjambed. And then if you look in the Shir HaSayam, there are spaces where there shouldn't be spaces. There shouldn't be spaces in the middle of a pasuk. Now, of course, we know that that's how you write poetry, and poetry is meant to be read differently than prose. But if you're just looking at the Parsha, oh, Vayechi is the antithesis of Shir HaSayam. Shir HaSayam is the antithesis of Vayechi. Vayechi puts no spaces where there should be spaces. Shir HaSayam puts spaces where there shouldn't be spaces. So he says as follows. It's really fascinating. He says that style always reflects content. The style of Parshas Vayechi reflects the content, because what is the style look? Everything is closed. Everything is shut. Everything is shuttered when it should be open. Well, that's a reference to Galus, because Yaakov was in Galus, and Yaakov was launching a Galus. And Chazal associated not just with Galus, but with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision that we shouldn't see Geula clearly. So Yaakov wanted to teach us. Bikesh Yaakov Legalus Esakets Vinistam Himenu. So it's not just Galus, but it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu refusing to let us know the roadmap. Could you imagine if we knew when Geula would come and how it would happen? It would be a different world. Hashem didn't want us to live in that world for all sorts of reasons. So the shuttering of the Jewish imagination, whether it's about prophetic information or just about life in Galus, is reflected by a text that's closed when it should be open, a text in which the spaces are eliminated. So now by inverse, in Az Yashir, you're opening. You're opening ideas, you're opening space, and that is opening something that was previously closed. In Vayechi, you're shuttering something that should have been open. In Parshas B'Shalach, you're opening something which should have been closed. So what are you opening in B'Shalach that should have been closed? So we'll talk a little bit about this maybe later, about Nevuah. But one thing you're opening is you're opening Torah. Okay, the Gemara says in Megillah, why were there spaces between Parshios and Parshios? Like, why did Hashem deliver the Torah as one long stream of characters? Why are there spaces? What does the Gemara say? In order to give Moshe a chance, Dafyomi, a couple days ago, in order to give Moshe a chance to review the Torah. So spaces are functionally necessary to understand Torah better. In the case of Moshe, for review, but in a general sense, space in Torah reflects greater understanding. So that's with regard to most of the Torah. When Hashem's talking to Moshe, the space leads to greater understanding of Torah because Moshe can review it. How does space lead to greater Torah in Az Yashir? The answer is mystical. That Torah, this is the big chiddush, that Torah, there are two chiddushim here, Torah is not just something which is always equally and readily available. There are times in history where, as the phrase goes, this is a very famous phrase in Kabbalah, Arubos Hashemayim Niftachu, where the heaven's gates open and Torah is more accessible and more and deeper Torah is accessible in ways that it wasn't before. We would think Torah is always the stream that is available from Shemayim, and it depends on how hard you learn, how much Yat Shemaya HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers to an individual person. Evidently, there's a third factor of Torah, and Torah is periodic. And there are periods in history in which Torah becomes revealed even though previously it wasn't. So ironically, in the 18th century, two very, very different claims were made about that. The Vilna Gaon and the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon believed the Vilna Gaon was sent to burst open. This is a phrase which was used, that there were parts of Torah that previously were unavailable to the Jewish people that became available through the agency of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was the shliach sent from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How else would you know Shas when you're 3 years old? The Vilna Gaon knew Shas when he's 3 years old. That's simply impossible. You can imagine a very, very, very bright boy and exponentially multiplier, It's impossible to know Shas at 3 unless there's a heavenly angel sent to help pry open gates of Torah. Now, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that period to pry open gates of Torah? One could say it's at the end of the Golos, one could say, we'll talk about this a little bit later. Chassidus made a claim that Torah can always be accessed in ways that hadn't been accessed before. It wasn't like a specific period, but there were new truths. So when Chassidim darshan Torah in newfound and newfangled ways, it's because those truths weren't available. I don't think they're talking about a certain period of history, but they're talking about certain people that happened to pry open the gates. So as Yashir, now that Am Yisrael is in Geula, here's the second Chiddush, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeems the Jewish people, it impacts Torah. It impacts not just our national history and our freedom, but it impacts the availability of Torah. So Az Yashir Moshe as a Shir HaZos is a reference to Torah. Because Ein Shir El Torah, Simu Kisvu Lechem as a Shir HaZos. So the Shir HaZos became available through Geula. And I believe, that one of the signs that this is a Geula process, who knows how long the process will take, but this is a process, is the fact that Torah is being studied in the 21st century in greater sweep than it's ever been studied before, at least in 2,000 years, maybe even 2,500 years. So to me, that's a sign that the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has started to redeem this world means that Torah is becoming more readily available through different channels, through different manners, and that's a sign. Or as the phrase goes, it's a play on words, when Shir HaShirim announces that history has awakened and the world is buzzing and nature is alive as a metaphor for the return of the Jewish people to redemptive history, Shir HaShirim writes, the birds are chirping in the land. How do you say the birds are chirping in the land in Shir HaShirim? Kol HaTor Nishma B'Yartzein, or Torah is a bird. But many people, just as a play on words, Kol HaTorah Nishma B'Yartzein. Not just the sound of the bird, but Kol HaTorah Nishma B'Yartzein, Baruch Hashem. Not only has Torah been revived, but Eretz Yisrael has become, for the first time in thousands of years, the epicenter of Torah. This is where Torah is being studied with greatest pitch and greatest intensity. So the spaces where they shouldn't be represent that Torah became more available, and therefore Kriyas Yam Suf is ironically not just a sequel to Yetzias Mitzrayim as we typically view it, but it's a prequel to Har Sinai. It's a sequel to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's the way we typically in the Haggadah in Mitzrayim, for every makkah there were 5 makkahs performed, there were 10, then there were 50, or maybe there was 250. So we tend to see Kriyas Yam Suf as the coda, as the final salvo of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but in this respect it's the start of Matan Torah. Because through Nevuah and through Geula, there are levels of Torah that are becoming available at that stage in history that were previously unavailable. Okay, a few minutes, since we have a few minutes about the beginning of the parsha. The Chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. U'b'nei Yisrael yatzu b'yad ramah. Who are they fighting? Like, why do we need these images? Especially Chamushim. If you interpret Chamushim, the literal interpretation means they were packing. They were armed to the teeth. You know, they had their guns, they were packing. Okay, Chazal Dashin Chamushim, 1 of 5, but they were full of weapons and Yad Ramah. So there really are two ideas that converge on this phrase or on these phrases. Number one is the rapid turnaround. Wait a second. Are these the same people who 3 days ago were slaves working? Okay, they didn't work for 6 months, but for 200 years. Just think about, we have a couple Americans here. Think about how hard it's been culturally for America or for South Africa to reset itself after so many hundred years of slavery. So you can put down on the books, you can write abolitionist legislation, and you can illegalize slavery, but it's deeply, deeply rooted in culture, and discrimination and bigotry, sadly, is deeply rooted in people's mindsets and people's mentality. It takes a long time for both the oppressor and the victim. The oppressor has to start seeing the victim as equal, and the victim has to stop seeing himself as a victim, which is very hard. Because victimhood sometimes is something we indulge in or luxuriate in because it's a catharsis. And we acquit ourselves of responsibility because we perpetuate the myth or the impression we're always a victim. It's easy to say, play the victim. Play the victim is a release from responsibility. So it's very hard to readjust social hierarchies and personal attitudes. And here, 3 days later, they're walking out with arms stretched up to Shemayim, Chamushim Alu B'nei Yisrael, ready to take on the world. They could even take on the Plishtim, but Hashem made a decision not to. That's almost like an undercomment. That's, you know, the undertext is they would have been prepared, but Hashem thought otherwise and knew better. Then because he said they're not as capable as they think they are. Hashem had to make that executive decision. what it shows is that the Jewish people, I talked about this last week, they really weren't in bondage to Paro. It was just something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu choreographed for future generations. As I heard the shiur last week, that's why Hashem had to intervene in Paro's heart. There's no way that Paro would have been able to subjugate Am Yisrael, the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chelek Eloka Mimal, with an internal da. It was something that was very artificial, very extrinsic, very. And the second that all that divinely choreographed shibud was removed, you saw the real Jew, you saw the real them, you saw who they really were. It's not as if the shibud really infiltrated into their hearts and changed who they were. Remember, this is a basic doctrine of Hasidus, that the Jewish Kedusha that was empowered or imbued by HaKadosh Baruch Hu is inalienable, and sin can't alter it, and certainly human hand and human tyranny can't alter it. So the second they get out of Mitzrayim, they're not slaves. You just remove the external cover, and now they're walking out chamushim, yad rama, proud, kingly, noble, princely. And that's why we go back in Shmos. Moshe couldn't understand that this is a people that deserves to be redeemed. They're slaves. They're fallen. They're religiously feeble. And what does Hashem say? Oh, you know the sign that they deserve to be redeemed? When you leave Mitzrayim, so we think there's a lot of interesting ways to interpret that pasuk. But what the Sfat Zema says is Hashem was telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, you'll see a second after they leave, they're ready for Har Sinai. And if a second after they leave, a minute after you walk out, they can come to Har Sinai, as far as I'm concerned. Or 6 weeks later, which is a short period of time. So the fact that they'll be ready so immediately for Har Sinai, that proves that they're really not as fallen as you think. They just look like slaves. They just look like fallen people. But it's all external. It's all extrinsic. Internally, they're the Am HaNivchar. Internally, the children of Yitzchak and Yaakov. But Tziacha, you'll see a second later. So now we're looking at Bishalach. We really are looking a second later. We're seeing them a second later, and we're seeing them in a very, very different state than they were in Parshas Bo. Let's stop here, because there's a second part to it. But two really fascinating Sfat Zemes. One is how Torah is affected by Jewish history, and how Torah is not just this consistent stream, but there are these supernova bursts of Torah which occur from period to period, sometimes led by people, sometimes led by Geula, of course all choreographed by Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the quick turnaround of the Jewish people, that they went from Avdus L'Cheiros, and they went from Avdus to being one pshat on Vayasev V'Lakim Am Derech Plishtim, according to one pshat in the Medrash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu fed them Heseva. We turn the interpretation of Vayasa means they turned to a different route, they took a detour, but Chazal Darshan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu treated them like kings and noblemen. So there was a transformation from the Chipazon, the hurried Avadim, who were fleeing from Mitzrayim, scurrying around their animals. All of a sudden it's Parshas Bishalach, and you've got people who are Yad Rama, Chamushim, Vayasev, and the B'nai Melachim, as they always were, but that B'nai Melachim added, that B'nai Melachim profile was covered by divinely choreographed, synthesized, manufactured tyranny, because the Jews can't really be tyrannized. Stay healthy, stay safe, stay alive. Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.